Hello, everyone, and welcome to this latest episode of the Debaterios podcast. I am one of your hosts, Justin, and I'm here, as always, with my amazing co-host, Oreo. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing good.
Doing good, and we are going to go over some news events from the past couple of weeks while we've been on a little bit of a hiatus. Of course, the biggest one is the Trump impeachment inquiry, and by the time this goes up tomorrow, it will already be out of date. It seems like every hour something else comes up, and it's been really hard to keep track of. So we're just going to give you neither one. So both of us are in school. We're doing our own thing on YouTube. We're doing our own thing in real life. So we're just going to give you the basic timeline and most recent events to the best of our knowledge about what's going on in the Trump impeachment inquiry. And to the best of our ability, we're going to give you our opinions on it. So there's so much going on. First of all, just general impressions. Oreo, what are your like general thoughts over this impeachment inquiry before we start diving into it?
I don't really know because I haven't been really caught up on it. But from what I know, Trump is, well, he has been facing impeachment since he's been elected in office, from all I could remember. So the fact that it seems like it could happen, something that Trump himself has said it's never going to happen, his supporters have said it's never going to happen, or at least become close to happening, it kind of feels interesting to see how this is all going to turn out.
Yeah, it seems like it's always been a point of contention, and it's always been a topic of interest throughout the entire Trump presidency. Is this the thing? Like every day, is this the thing that finally does it? Is this the thing that ends his presidency? Is this the thing that cancels him and finally gets everyone to turn on him? And it's never really taken until now. And so we finally get an impeachment inquiry, like an official one going on. Not yet put up to a vote, I don't think. Of course, you know, it's been an hour since I checked, so that could be out of date now. So this is finally the thing that has pushed it over the edge, and now even Nancy Pelosi is on board with starting the impeachment inquiry. So I'm going to go through a really quick timeline of events here and just sprinkle in just a little bit of stuff from the news here. So the source I'm using, this is from NBC News, so their politics section. So this is by Elizabeth Janowski. It was published 4 days ago. So again, I want to fill in the gaps in all 4 days this happened. So here's what we know so far. So first thing that ever happened, back in May 2014, Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's son, joins the board of Burisma. So this is a Ukrainian oil and gas company, and he got hired for a job in consulting the company on matters of transparency, corporate governance, and responsibility, and things of that nature. Fast forward to August 13th, 2018, Trump extends $250 million to Ukraine. So as part of the National Defense Authorization Act for the fiscal year 2019, President Donald Trump signed an agreement to give $250 million in aid to Ukraine security assistance initiatives. And this was approved by Congress. It wasn't just Trump's unilateral decision. This was approved by, you know, a committee and an entire organization. So beyond that. Fast forward to May 9th of this year. So we went from 2014, and then in 2018, Trump extends this $250 million. So that was over a year ago. Fast forward to this year, May 9th. Giuliani states plan to investigate Hunter Biden. So he, in an interview with the New York Times, Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, says that he plans to meet with Ukrainian president-elect Volodymyr Zelensky. Volodymyr Zelensky, oh no, I'm mispronouncing that, to discuss a potential inquiry into Hunter Biden's involvement with Burisma. And after that, just a few days later, the investigation concludes and they find no evidence of Biden's wrongdoing. So that investigation that Giuliani tried to open really went nowhere. And then,
yep,
August 28th of this year, reports indicate that Trump administration withholds aid to Ukraine. So this $250 million in aid that had been allocated for helping Ukraine has been withheld, purportedly in order to review the funding program. So a few days, like 2 weeks later, September 9th of this year, House Democrats launch investigation of Giuliani So this, we're finally getting into some recent events here. So the chairman of the Foreign Affairs, Intelligence, and Oversight Committees requests documents from the White House in relation to what they called Giuliani's attempts to coerce the Ukrainian government into pursuing two politically motivated investigations under the guise of anti-corruption activity. So that's an investigation we were doing from earlier. And then same day, so September 9th again, IG notifies Intelligence Committee of whistleblower complaints. So this was early in September, just a little over about a month and a half ago. So the whistleblower complaint. And this is a point of contention that a lot of Republicans are saying that this is evidence that it was politically motivated. So Inspector General Michael Atkinson of the Intelligence Committee community alerts the House Intelligence Committee, headed by Representative Adam Schiff, to the existence of a whistleblower complaint. A group of House committees subsequently request that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo release documents related to the Trump administration and Ukraine. Next. September 19th, whistleblower complaint linked to Ukraine. The Washington Post first reports that the whistleblower complaint pertains to a promise that Trump made to a foreign leader. A later report indicates that Ukraine was at the center of that complaint. September 23rd, Trump suggests that he tied Ukraine funding to corruption allegations. This, I thought, was amazing. This is the only story that I'm going to go into a little bit deeper. Trump tells reporters that he had tied funding for Ukraine to the country's investigation of corruption, although in later interviews he denies making such a command. This is so in line with, it's so on brand for Trump. So he said these two things in the same day. We want to make sure that country is honest. It is very important to talk about corruption. If you don't talk about corruption, why would you give money to a country that you think is corrupt? So he said that early in the day. And then later into the day, he says this. I put no pressure on them whatsoever. I could have. I think it would have been possibly have been okay if I did, but I didn't. So the classic Trump defense, I didn't do it, but if I did, it would have been okay. So very on brand for Trump. So he's said that if he did offer some quid pro quo, it would have been okay. But he didn't. So, you know, so it doesn't really matter. And I'm sure if you've been keeping up with the news here recently, oh man, you know how that ends up going. And then so after that, just the day after that, Pelosi announces the impeachment inquiry. So it's September 24th, after making his like contradictory statements, Pelosi announces the impeachment inquiry. The day after that, the White House releases notes, not a full transcript, but notes from the Trump-Zelensky call. So, and he asks his counterpoint to do us a favor. That's going to be really key wording in this conversation that's probably going to come up over and over again as evidence of quid pro quo is... do us a favor. So kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge. All right. Then the White House, day after that, they released the whistleblower complaint. So basically, the White House discloses the declassified whistleblower complaints, yada, yada, yada. So day after that, September 27th, House Democrats subpoena Pompeo. So they write a letter demanding Pompeo turn over documents related to that call by October 4th. We'll see how that goes. Kurt Volkner, special envoy to Ukraine, resigns. He steps down amid the impeachment inquiry. So he did this, a source familiar with the matter told NBC News, because he wanted to have more freedom over what he could say if he were called to testify before Congress. So the special envoy to Ukraine stepped down from his position so he would have more freedom to talk about it, which that's kind of a big deal. All right. And then September 30th, House Democrats subpoena Giuliani. So we've already seen a few subpoenas from people who were not being as forthcoming as the House Intelligence Committee would like. So they subpoena Giuliani on September 30th. Because, of course, he was the one who kind of a year ago pushed for that investigation. All right.
Yep.
And then Trump accuses, and now we get to October 2nd, Trump accuses Schiff of orchestrating that whistleblower complaint. This is where that story from earlier comes into. So a House Intelligence Committee spokesman acknowledges that the whistleblower consulted with an aide to Chairman Adam Schiff before filing his complaint. It was saying that did happen. We know that's true. And so that was, you know, gave Trump the, an incentive, I guess, to point a finger at Schiff as the orchestrator of the complaint. So instead of just being consulted, right, he is the one who was directing it because, well, we know he operates on moon logic. All right, and then this is where it gets just amazing. Like, it makes you wonder, like, does anything matter anymore? So he publicly urges China to investigate the Bidens on October 3rd. So he's in doing his one of his, I don't know why every other soundbite I hear from him is in front of those helicopter blades, but China should start an investigation into the Bidens because what happened in China is just about as bad as what happened with Ukraine. So that's public. That's neat. October 3rd, I actually missed this one. Details on IRS whistleblower complaint revealed. I actually missed this one. In a separate, in a separate whistleblower complaint, an employee at the IRS reported that he was told at least one Treasury Department political appointee had attempted to improperly interfere in the annual audit of Trump and Vice President Mike Pence's tax returns. So the tax returns are making another appearance, and we have another separate whistleblower complaint talking about them. Then October 4th, texts show U.S. ambassadors pushing Ukraine investigation. So text messages from U.S. diplomats, which Volker, the special like envoy to Ukraine, the person who stepped down, he turned them over to Congress as part of the impeachment inquiry. So maybe he wouldn't have been able to do that if he had kept his position. So good on him. And he revealed that he tried to persuade the president of Ukraine to investigate the Bidens in exchange for an official invitation to the White House. All right. October 4th, Pompeo misses subpoena deadline. After that, House Dems subpoena another White House, give another subpoena White House for Ukraine documents. And they have since said that they are not going to honor any of these subpoenas, which is really cool when you're trying to investigate something. So much has happened in such a short period of time.
Yeah.
Almost all of this, with the exception of the first two stories, has happened in the past 2 months. So, and like I said, this is just I feel like I'm talking a long time, but this is just a sprinkling of what's going on in this in the impeachment inquiry here. All right, October 7th, another House Dems subpoena Defense Secretary and Trump Budget Chief. October 8th, White House refuses to comply with impeachment inquiry. In a defiant letter, the White House announces that it will not turn over requested documents related to the Trump-Ukraine probe, arguing that the House Democrats are conducting an invalid and unconstitutional investigation. October 10th, the next day, or 2 days after, House Dems issue more subpoenas. They're just tossing out subpoenas here after the White House refuses to cooperate. So they subpoena Rick Perry, who has since announced that he's going to step down from his position, and two businessmen, Igor Fruman and Lev Parnas, so two businessmen, who worked with Giuliani on his dealings with Ukraine. That same day, those two businessmen are arrested on campaign finance charges. So that's fun. Next day, October 11th, Gordon Sondland agrees to testify in impeachment inquiry. So he was the U.S. ambassador to the EU, and he defies State Department's orders by agreeing to a closed-door interview as part of the impeachment inquiry. October 11th, so we're almost caught up here. Trump loses appeal over a House subpoena on tax returns. So he lost that appeal, so they're going to have to turn over his tax returns, his documents dating back to 2009. October 11th, Marie Yovanovitch, all these names, who was the former ambassador to Ukraine, testifies before the House. Apparently, she testified that she was pressured very hard for the State Department to remove her from office. So there was a lot of pressure to remove her from office. So they could be related to this whole Ukraine scandal. We're almost there. Ukraine's October 11th, Ukraine's chief former prosecutor, Yuri Lutsenko, is identified as a previously unnamed official referred to in that federal indictment as having directed a plot to oust that woman from earlier. All right, literally, man, there's so
much. It's a lot.
So much. All right. And then let's see, I'm skipping over just a few things here. Trump's former aide to Russia testifies in the impeachment inquiry, even though that the White House obtained, tried to limit what she could say in her testimony. October 15th, we're finally up to this week, or at least within a week. Giuliani refuses to comply with the subpoena. So White House refused to comply with the subpoena. Now Giuliani's refusing to comply with the subpoena. Same deal. He calls it unconstitutional, baseless, illegitimate, all that fun stuff. Pence refuses House request to turn over documents, so he's refusing to cooperate. Pelosi announces House won't hold impeachment vote at this time. That's what I was talking about earlier. This was on the 15th. So we have no vote yet that I know of. Esper says that he will no longer comply with subpoena, so nobody is cooperating. Defense Secretary Esper previously indicated that he would turn over documents related to the Trump-Ukraine call. Now it says he won't, which is great. You know, and if you have nothing to hide, you should definitely hide everything. Oh, man. October 17th, so... All right, these are the last two. Gordon Sondland, the U.S. ambassador to the EU, testifies that Giuliani told him he was ordered by Trump to push Ukraine's investigation of both the 2016 election and the Ukraine gas company tied to Hunter Biden. So, testifies that Giuliani told him that Giuliani was ordered by Trump to push Ukraine's investigations. And then finally, that explosive press conference on Thursday, White House admits to quid pro quo with Ukraine. So quid pro quo. I've said that so many. It's a tongue twister. This was Mark Mulvaney, a person who I did not know existed, acknowledges that Trump withheld funds from Ukraine in part due to his request for assistance in investigating the DNC server. He says, get over it. There's going to be political influence in foreign policy. So they just admit to it. The deny. Okay, we did it, but it's not a big deal that we did it. And then they walk that back later, too. That is so much stuff to happen. Now that I read it all out loud, how long did that take? Almost 15 minutes. So that was
a lot.
And it's not even up to date. And over the weekend, apparently Mick Mulvaney is in hot water, the person who gave that explosive press conference. They tried to oust him before this. So, they tried to oust him before this. Jared Kushner said that, no, we need to be interviewing somebody else for this job. And this is before all this stuff happened. We have a few Republicans blasting the inquiry, but a few Republicans notably are like having the softest possible, like, yeah, Trump kind of shouldn't be doing all this stuff. So there are a few Republicans coming out against it. And we already see efforts by Mitch McConnell, for example, to do as much as he can to halt it. So, for example, Mitch McConnell offered a timeline for impeachment that is just ridiculously short. So something that is, he offered a timeline that he knew would be impossible to meet in an effort to make the Democrats look bad.
Right.
So it's, we're playing politics now. So it's not about rule of law. It's not about making sure the offense of the presidency has any integrity left whatsoever. It is all about make sure you stay in power. All right. Now that we've been over that, I've been talking for so long. I apologize, Oreo.
It's okay. It's fine.
Any insights that you gained from that or anything that I missed that you wanted to add?
Yeah, there's definitely corruption within the Trump administration. We've known this for a while now. I mean, even with the Russia situation, like, Russia, I guess, meddling or... But yeah, just being involved in our elections, that was from, I remember when that first happened, that was big, but this is bigger. Imagine not only like getting accused of having another country be involved in U.S. politics, not once in your presidency, but twice in your presidency. And then the second time it actually happens. And then the third time, I guess you could say it's China, because he publicly called for them to investigate. But
yeah,
to me, that feels like Trump. It's just usual Trump tactics, like trying to appeal to an audience, try to give a show to the media, really.
Yeah, it's part of his strategy, too. If he's accused of doing something, he's going to play all angles. Not only did I not do it, but it would have been okay if I did do it. He's trying to cover all his bases. And that's seen as strength by his base. Like, oh, they're accusing him of doing something? And he's saying, like, yeah, I could have done it. What are you going to do about it? I think that's I guess, a form of strength. That's why they love him. He's busting out all the norms. He's making sure that he's just knocking them all down, which I guess I'm so tired.
It reminds me of when O.J. Simpson wrote that book, If I Did Do It.
Yeah.
Isn't that the title of it, If I Did Do It? Or
something close to that. Yeah. What was it? O.J. Simpson book.
He's like, if I did do it, this is how
if
I would do
I did it.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, if I did it, this is how I would do it. I'm like, oh.
Like, yeah, and I bet that book sold though. So
yeah.
He's getting what he wants. All right. Do we have anything to add on that?
I'm definitely gonna keep up with it, because this is starting to sound like a convoluted soap opera surrounded around the White House and shit.
Everything that comes out, like, every day is just a new story. And it's, on the one hand, like, finally we're getting an impeachment inquiry. This is finally an official investigation. Well, another investigation, but this time it's actually, we're talking about where we're moving forward with impeachment. But on the other hand, nothing has stuck so far. This doesn't seem any worse than, like, kids in cages or a lot of the other stuff that he's done. So I don't see why this would be different. And it does worry me a little bit going into 2020. I have no idea if this will help, hurt, have no effect.
It might actually, like, seeing what from his base, it might actually help him a little bit, because I used to think this about Elizabeth Warren when she said she was running for president. Like, if she's the Democratic front runner, he's going to use the Pocahontas tactic so much. And it's like, his base, even though this is dry and played out and we've seen it a bunch of times before, his base, they're going to eat it up. We've seen them do this over and over and over again, where Trump will do something that has been played out to the point where it's actually worn out, and it doesn't seem like it will have any type of effectiveness, but his base, they're so dedicated to him that they'll keep it going, or they'll find new ways of keeping it going.
Yeah. It's never an issue of is Trump's base going to abandon him? I think the answer to that is no. I don't think it is at all. But what I am wondering is, the polls have shown that depending on which poll you ask, I think the aggregates that put this together, a very slim majority of Americans are in favor of impeachment. So it could be that Americans are just sick of this. They're sick of the news cycle being dominated by Trump. They're sick of him, obviously, like, they're sick of his ego first grievance politics mentality going forward. Because it's obvious he's not putting the time in to help the American people, because he's involved with scandal after scandal. And all of his press conferences are about defense on why this latest thing he did was okay, or that he didn't actually do it, but if he did do it, it would be okay. So we might just be sick of it. Honestly, if you were a Democrat running right now, my biggest campaign slogan would be, hey, elect me and I will be so boring. You'll forget that I'm president. Things will just work okay. You'll have one relative that keeps up with it and they'll tell you how I'm doing. But you won't hear about me on the news every day. You might hear about me once a week. Wouldn't that be great? That's my slogan right there. Justin, SJW Days 2020. You won't hear from me again. All right. So we brought the mood down a little bit. And our next story today, unfortunately,
will bring the mood up.
Not really.
So our next news story is about Tatiana Jefferson. I think most of our viewers might have heard of this story, but I'm not sure. So just to provide some background, this is from NBC News. The article is written by Dennis Romero, and it's titled, Texas Police Officer Shoots Woman to Death Inside Her Home. A Fort Worth police officer checking out a residence with an open door opened fire on a 28-year-old woman inside her home. So this is, I'm just going to read the article. I don't know if, wait, do I read the whole article or just part of it? Or
you just read parts of it if you want to. I read basically the entire article of that one, so.
So a Fort Worth, Texas police officer called to check on a residence with a door that was ajar, opened fire on a woman, killing her inside the home, authorities said. The shooting early Saturday occurred less than 2 weeks after a police officer in nearby Dallas was found guilty of murder for fatally shooting a man inside his home. I think you guys remember that, the whole Amanda, what is her name? I think it's Amber Geiger, if I'm not mistaken. That whole situation where she walks into her apartment. Notice the emphasis on that. Her apartment, and believes that the owner of the apartment, who was a black man, was a burglar and shot him. And it was just a fucked up situation. Sorry, back to the article. In 2018, in both cases, the officers are white and the victims were African-American. In the Fort Worth shooting, which occurred at 2:25 a.m. Saturday, the victim was identified by the Tarrant County Medical Examiner as Tatiana Coquis Jefferson, 28 years old, according to NBC Dallas Fort Worth. Body camera footage shows perspective of the officer outside the home, peering inside a window using a flashlight, spotting someone inside standing near a window and telling her, put your hands up, show me your hands, before shooting seconds later. At no point does he identify himself as a police officer. The Fort Worth police say one shot was fired. Officers entered the home and began providing emergency medical care to the woman, who was pronounced dead, police said. A gun was found inside the home, police added, but it wasn't clear if the woman was near it at the time of the shooting. Neighbor James Smith said he called police non-emergency number at about 2 a.m. When he noticed a door to Jefferson's residence had been open since 10 p.m. He called to make sure his neighbor was all right and was stunned by what transpired after. If you don't feel safe with the police department, then who do you feel safe with? Smith said. Yeah, I'm just going to stop it right there because I feel like that's a powerful place to stop. Because it seems as if it was because when I first heard that he called the non-emergency number, I thought it was a mental health check. We've seen that case too with police officers being called to check on people who are mentally ill, trying to make sure that they're okay. And then next thing you know, the mentally ill person ends up getting hurt. I believe that there was one situation I remember where I think it was in Florida, and this guy, I don't know if he had autism or if he had schizophrenia. I forgot which one, but the police were called because they wanted to check up on him to see if he was okay. And they just absolutely abused their power on the guy. They pinned him down to the ground. The guy was freaking out. And I don't know if they tased him or they knocked him out, but they were making joke. No, it was, he was pinned down so much that he passed out. That's what happened. Yep. And they were making jokes about him not waking up, one of the officers. And he was like, oh, wakey, wakey, time for breakfast. And both of them laughed. That was horrible. Yep. So I can resonate with this. Actually, what Smith said resonates, because if you want to check up on your neighbor and you call a non-emergency number and they send police officers to check on people, and then shit like this happens where, one, the police officer doesn't identify themselves as an officer, and two, they don't think before shooting, they just shoot. Who are we supposed to depend on? I think that's the question that resonates with this situation, is if you can't trust the police, then who can you trust to check up on your neighbors and make sure that they're okay? And situations like this do create fear and they do create tension, because like the article noted, I want to look up her name right quick. I don't want to butcher her name. The Geiger
woman. Right.
What's her? Yeah, Amber Geiger. Yep, Amber Geiger situation where Botham Jean, that's his name, Botham Jean, in his own apartment. This was not her apartment. This was his apartment. She walks in and she thinks Botham, the owner, is a burglar in her apartment and shoots and kills him.
Do you find any comfort in the verdict that she was, you know, she was charged with murder? She was found guilty of murder. Does that make you feel any better about
it? Yeah, it does. Because I mean, after what, like, you know, with years of, like, I guess police officers getting away with certain things like this.
Yeah.
Even like, cause I live in Chicago and we had our own situation like this, but it wasn't like exactly that situation, but it involved police brutality. The Laquan McDonald situation. Mm-hmm. And I remember a lot of people were like, well, he was walking towards with a knife, and it's like, yeah, he was, but don't you think that shooting him 16 times when he's already down on the ground and he's already, I guess, what's the right word? Hurt, incapacitated, whatever. Shooting him 16 times is excessive. Or you could have used non-lethal force, like a taser. You know, I know, like, sometimes tasers don't work, but the officer didn't even use a taser. They just used their pistol. And also, if you look at the video, he walks away from the police. I think they said he was high on drugs, but, you know, that whole situation was kind of polarizing here. And everybody, listen, the whole day the trial happened, all I heard on the bus to school, on the bus back, in the classroom, everybody was prepared for a riot. Because that's just what happens. Like, when you look back at Rodney King, when the verdict of the officers that beat Rodney King inches of his life, when they were found not guilty, a riot ensued. So people here in Chicago, especially Black people, they were like, oh, well, you know, if the officers found not guilty, oh, you better get ready for a riot. My mom, I remember she kept calling me that day when I was telling her I'm on my way home. She's like, Isaiah, get home as quick as you can in case they start rioting, in case shit happens, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, I think Martin Luther King said this, the riots are the language of the unheard. When you have people who have faced years on years on years of oppression in this country, and they don't get fair, equal justice as everyone else, there's an anger that, I guess, arises in them, an anger that's been suppressed for years. And when riots happen, that anger comes out. And some people don't understand it. Some people, they don't see why it's happening. But you have to understand that it's the language of the unheard. When people are unheard, that creates fear, in my opinion. Like, oh, if they're not listening to us, then that scares me, because it's like we don't matter. Fear unchecked leads to anger. Anger unchecked leads to outrage, violence. So in my opinion, when the Laquan McDonald situation was happening here, that's what I was feeling. I was like, okay, if that officer is found not guilty, we're gonna have anger turn into violence. The anger was not checked, but luckily he was found guilty. Mm-hmm. So in my opinion, that was a sense of relief. The Amanda Geiger situation, same thing. It was just a sense of relief. I'm like, great, we don't have another, I guess, Ferguson or another LA or, you know, another Watts. You know, we don't have any of those now, you know, because finally it seems like the justice system is holding these officers accountable for their actions.
Do you think a lot of that activism and the voices that were brought up and the attention brought to these cases, do you think that that played any role in the case of Amber, what was her name?
Amber Geiger.
Amber Geiger. And in this case, I know this case is still fairly new, but murder charges mm-hmm. are being brought on them.
Yeah, so, I feel like activism does help. A lot of people, well, a lot of, let's say, skeptics, a lot of anti-SJWs or skeptics or right-wingers, they often say that Black Lives Matter is ineffective. And it's like, well, no, they've actually been effective. Do you want to know the reason why we have police, why we have body cams on police officers? Black Lives Matter. After, what was it?
Freddie Gray?
Ferguson. After Ferguson, after Eric Gardner, after all those cases of officer misconduct, we pushed for body cams on officers to see what they're doing, to see if the killing or like if these police killings are justifiable. Like they are effective in that sense. They also are effective in pushing the justice system to hold officers accountable for their actions. You know, I think that Black Lives Matter is effective in those senses. So yeah, I do feel like activism has been effective in, you know, these cases in terms of verdicts.
All right. So yeah, I was really encouraged when the district attorney sought murder charges against that former officer. The former officer stepped down, but if they hadn't stepped down, they said they would have been fired.
So, yeah.
That was encouraging to me. So at least, because this seems, I haven't looked for it because sometimes you can only handle so much in a day. I haven't looked to see what the kind of, what the defense is, if there's any defense for this officer. I haven't looked, and I'm glad I haven't looked.
Yeah, I also saw further information that her funeral, I believe that her funeral has been postponed. Yeah. I think it's some sort of family dispute. I didn't go that deep into it yet, but I was just more focused on the actual situation of her death. But yeah.
Oh, yeah, I think that's fair. I heard that too, but yeah, we're mostly focused on the circumstances there. So, do we have anything else to say about that story? Because we've had two fun news stories in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to bring the conversation back to something a little bit more upbeat?
Yeah, let's bring it back to something
a little bit more upbeat. All right, so let's get to know each other a little bit more, and let's let the audience get to know us a little bit more. So, me and Oreo both are in long-term relationships. I am, of course, married, and you are dating your wonderful girlfriend, Silence.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not gonna say her real name. Okay, I'll just use her nickname. What's Kels or Kel? I was going to call her Kelso because she loves That 70s Show, but she said her ex called her Kelso, so she doesn't feel comfortable being called that. So I was like, okay, although I still have the urge to call her that from time to time, and I did, and she kind of had this reaction like, oh my God, but I just thought I was just joking. But yeah, Kels, that's her name for short.
So,
or you can call her Silence if you want, because that's also her Twitter name.
Yeah, that's her Twitter name. We'll put her, both of our significant others are on Twitter. I'm going to put their respective Twitter handles in the description of the video and in the description of the podcast if you want to go show them just a little bit of love. I love them both. They are really, really cool people, and they deserve a little bit of love thrown their way. But let's talk specifically about certain love being thrown their way. How did you two meet?
We met online through this. It was this app called Amino. Think of it. You remember Google Plus communities, right?
Yes. Wow.
Yeah. Amino is basically that, but that's just the entire app. It's just different communities with different interests. And I forgot the exact Amino we met on, but we started talking and quickly developed a friendship. We kind of bonded over music interests because we both like 21 Pilots to some degree. She likes 21 Pilots way more than I do, but I just kind of knew some of the songs and we kind of bonded over that. And I think about, I want to say Because we took our time. So I think like maybe like 2 months later, if I can't remember correctly, we started dating. And yeah, that's how the relationship started.
Nice. All right. And how long have you all been together?
Over a year.
Over a year. Nice. All right. Well, I'm glad that's going well for you. So me and my husband met at a barbecue. And we met because we were both talking. It was actually pretty similar to what you were talking about. We both bonded over talking about the video game BioShock, which is, one of my favorite games of all time. It's one of his favorite games of all time. And it wasn't like we knew each other. We had mutual friends. And so we just happened to meet at this barbecue. I didn't know he was bi. He didn't know I was gay. He knew either me or my roommate was gay coming in, but he kind of mixed them up in their head, and he thought my roommate was the gay one and I was the straight one. So he was just talking to me, and we were just bonding over nothing. Or we were just bonding because it was fun to talk to. So we bonded over BioShock. We talked about that for about an hour and a half, all while failing to get this grill lit up and started. We're pretty sure we gave everybody food poisoning from undercooking burgers. So that was really fun. So we talked about BioShock, and the reason I actually got a tattoo to commemorate that. So if you ever played BioShock, you know this is the tattoo.
Oh, I plan on getting it. I'm getting that with my next order.
Really? So here's the tattoo. To see. Here's the one for the.
You know what's weird? My girlfriend has a tattoo. No, I don't know if on the same arm, but sort of in the same place. It's a heart and a treble clef inside of it.
Nice.
Because she loves music.
I'm a huge nerd and I love BioShock. But I have the added benefit of saying, no, this is how me and my husband met. So I have that as a little reminder. And I don't know how. I still think after that entire day was over, we didn't know that we were options for each other. We had to meet again at a gay bar. So this was back when we actually went out. And one day, he never went out. He was never something that he did. But our mutual
He's just like me.
Yes.
He's just like, I don't know if it's a bi guy thing that we don't go out, but God, he's just like me.
Yes.
I never go out.
So our mutual friend group, for some reason, pulled him out. They I don't know, remember if me being going out with him was an incentive, but yeah, I was there. So maybe that was kind of the incentive. And we went out to a very, I won't get into too much detail, a very gay night at a very gay bar. Let's put it that way. Very gay night at a very gay bar. And somehow, I just noticed him, like, looking at me. And then I looked back at him. And then we just kind of, like, did that little scoot closer together thing. And then, I forgot what happened. A few drinks happened. And then we were making out. And that's how that night went. So, of course, we exchanged numbers. And this is what makes me a terrible husband, but I'm telling you this because it's a really easy way for me to remember our anniversary. Our first date after that was delayed because Borderlands 2 came out that day, and I wanted to play it with my friends. So our very first date was postponed because I wanted to play Borderlands 2, and he was cool with it. It would have been so easy and so understandable for him to go, no, fuck that. But I guess, I don't know, we had a really good connection. And he's like, you know what? He's worth giving another shot. But that means if I ever forget our anniversary, I just look up the release date of Borderlands 2. And that's why.
So September 18th, 2012. I just looked it up.
Yep. That's when our first date was supposed to be. And that's what I count as our anniversary. Easy to look up, easy to remember.
Me and my girlfriend's anniversary, it's August 3rd. The only way I can remember that is because her birthday is October 3rd. So it's like 2 months prior to her birthday. So I'm just like, yeah, I remember our anniversary because it's 2 months before your birthday. Exactly. So, yeah. Also, I do remember we also bonded over our experiences with exes, because that was one thing we talked about for hours, just like our exes. So, let's just say I haven't been lucky with the ladies, all right? Like, my life's been kind of crappy with the ladies and the gentlemen too, because I ship with the guy and that didn't go well. Turns out the guy only wanted me for certain things, but yeah, her ex, he's just a douchebag. That's all I have to say. Really just emotionally abusive. And she still suffers from some anxiety to this day. So I try to help her through that, because of just some of the shit that he said to her and has even done to her. He kind of reminds me a little bit of the guy I was with, in terms of just wanting her for certain things. but yeah, we talked about that for hours, and that's something that we bonded over, and it became a friendship. I quickly fell in love with her. She didn't quickly fall in love with me, because unknowing to me at the time, and I think it was knowing to me, I was just so in love with her that she recently got out of the relationship with him. So she wanted time to like to herself. And she said the one thing she liked about me when we were, I guess, kind of getting to know each other is I didn't want to rush into it. Like, sure, I said, because she said, I remember when you said, I love you. I was just like, I don't know how to respond to that. Like, how do you love me right now? But she just said that she liked that I wasn't apprehensive to wanting to like go slow, that I was open to it, because she said that her ex wasn't. So she said that if I kind of like went fast, it would remind her of him, and then she would be apprehensive to, you know, actually trying to go out with me. But yeah, that's the story of us. I did say that if we have kids one day, I'm going to lie to them. I got this joke from a Vine, but I'm going to lie to them and say, me and your mom were in college one time and I accidentally bumped. She dropped her books. And she was picking them up, and I helped her. Kid, oh, that's great. Yeah, then I saw that ass, and I was like,
then we started to do some.
Oh yeah, then I saw that. She started laughing at that, by the way. She actually played along with it. I think she said, me and her were walking in the hallway, then I bumped into her, and then she bumped against something, and she said that it was okay because I was protected by my.
Yeah, nice. All right. So at least we ended on a more positive note. So
yeah.
Yeah.
With all the depressing news, there's always light in the world.
Yeah. There's still people close to you. You still have a lot of people in your life that are going to pull you out of it. Or at the very least, you can both scream at each other for 20 minutes straight. Knowing that it's just a bonding exercise. Just look at each other straight in the eye.
Ah! Oh, wait, what's the name of that movie at the end where the guy's like pointing at the woman and screaming? It's some horror movie from the 70s. Oh, The Body Snatchers. That's what it's called. Yeah.
Yeah, you just do that. And we'll see how long your relationship lasts after that. This has been my relationship advice to everyone out there. Just point and scream, and that's how you're gonna find Mr.
or
Mrs.
Call.
Or
just like
and be right.
If you do it in public, if you do it in public and people are weirded out, just say, hey, this is my mating call. All right. Someone's gonna track this.
It's gonna work for somebody. guided someone to their dream person. So
yeah. Just like if you see your crush at school, I know this is going to make you like a weirdo. Like if you guys are in school, or let's just say you see like someone that you like in public, just like point and scream at them. Go like, and yeah, they'll find you attractive immediately.
Immediately. All right.
I'm starting to notice why I've been unlucky with people.
It's not me. Oh, now that I'm looking back at it, I was clearly not screaming loud enough.
Yeah.
All right, well, now that we've made sure everybody is loved, in all the right ways. I think that's going to do it for this episode of the Debate Rios podcast. So thank all of you for tuning in. I'm going to let Oreo sign us out.
Thank you guys so much for watching the Debate Rios podcast. I'm one of your co-hosts, Oreo.
And I'm your other co-host, Justin.
And we'll see you in the next episode. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.